Morning. Today's daf from Pesachim Mem Zayin, where Mem Vav Amud Beis. We are involved today in a fundamental debate between Rav Chis and Rabba regarding the principle of Hohel. Hohel has come up already a couple times in the Masechta. Hohel came up in yesterday's Mishnah. The Mishnah that started on the bottom of Mem Vav Amud Aleph had a dilemma. You have dough, it's Tameh, and you want to make matzah with that dough. Problem is that you're going to be straddled with an issue that you have to be mafresh challah. The challah is going to be inedible. And because of the confluence of the halachas of challah and the halachas of yantiv, so you're going to get a little bit stuck. It's not going to be clear exactly what to do. So Rabbi Eliezer in the Mishnah says that what you should first do is you should bake the dough into matzah and afterwards be mafresh challah. Without going through all the issues, that's Rabbi Elazar Shita, and the Rabbi Yoshua said there's no problem whatsoever. You don't really need to concern yourself. You could just simply be mafresh challah the way you normally do. The hafreshes challah is going to end up becoming chametz, but according to Rabbi Yeshua, that's fine because the Torah doesn't prohibit that kind of chametz. That chametz is not owned by you. It's shel hektish. It belongs to hektish. No kohen owns it yet, and so therefore there's no issue about your abaye matzeh, as nobody's going to really be owning that challah. Good, and what's that issue between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua? Rabbi Eliezer is worried about a Bali Rabbi Yamatzeh in that scenario, and Rabbi Yoshua is not worried. So the Gemara gave a couple of suggestions yesterday. One is that it has to do with Tova Sana, in terms of ownership of Tova Sana. Again, all this I'm saying over really quickly and not explaining much, but go back to yesterday's daf where the Gemara explained a little bit better. And so that's one way to decide the difference between Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Eliezer. Or the other way is the principle of Hohel. The principle of Hohel is basically, does halacha allow us to look at possibilities? And to say that since this possibly could happen, there's potential for this to happen, so therefore the halacha regards that as significant. That's the general idea behind Hohel. In the case of the challah, so we know that even though you're a mafresh challah, you can always go to a chacham and ask a sheila and ask the chacham to remove you from that challah that you assign the status of challah, and so therefore it could return back to a previous state. So it's possible you can go to a chacham, and it's possible he could release you from your neder. So since it's a possibility, Rabbi Yoshua says that this piece of challah therefore is going to have status because of the possibility. I didn't mean Rabbi Yoshua, I meant Rabbi Eliezer. On the other hand, Rabbi Yoshua does not subscribe to Hohel. So that's the Gemara's explanation of the machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua. Once we're opening up the doors for the discussion of Hohel, so the Gemara walked right in, and the Gemara discussed it in another context. On Yontif, you're allowed to cook. We're going to see this together in Masech the Beitza. Certain malachas were allowed in order to have Simchas Yontif, malachas that involve Ochel Nefesh, and so therefore you're allowed to cook, and you're allowed to bake, and you're allowed to carry in. We'll get to all that in Masech the Beitza. But you're only allowed to cook for Yontif. You can cook from Yontif for that day, but you can't cook from Yontif for the following day for a weekday. And if you do so that's an issur d'oraisa, meaning once you no longer have the heter of ochel nefesh, so then it's just simply a violation of yantif. And what if I cook on yantif, not for yantif, but for the next day? So that's absolutely prohibited. However, what kind of prohibition we're talking about? So Rav Chista in the Gemara yesterday said that you're going to get malchus. It's an issur d'oraisa, subject to malchus. For violating yantif, it's not a mises beisdin. Mises Basin is only for Chil Shabbos, but nevertheless, it's a lav. It's a lav in the Torah. You're going to get Malkus. That's Shitas Rav Chista. Now, Rabba says, interestingly, you're not going to get Malkus. Now, Rabba's not condoning. You can't operate in this behavior, but you're not going to get Malkus. Why? Because Rabba subscribes to the principle of Hohel. Hohel, the idea behind Hohel in this particular context means, look, I know I'm saying that I'm cooking from Yontif for a weekday, but who knows? Maybe as Yontif is coming to a close and sometime in the afternoon, a group of guests walk into the house and they're hungry and I have all this food. So it's possible that we may be benefiting from this food that I cooked on Yontif for Yontif. And so therefore, Rabbi's of the position that you're not going to get Malkus. The principle of Hohel is going to spare you from Malkus. So that is Rabbi's position. And what we have over here is a fundamental debate between Rav Chista and Rabba, whether or not we employ the principle of Hohel or we do not employ the principle of Hohel. The Gemara yesterday had the back and forth between Rabba and Rav Chista. So let me ask you a question. Rabba says to Rav Chista, so you don't say Hohel, you don't subscribe to Hohel. So how are you going to be cooking from Yontif to Shabbos? Meaning what happens when you have Yontif followed then by Shabbos? Yontif comes out on a Friday and the following day Shabbos. So we know we cook from Yontif to Shabbos. So according to you, how do you do that? Meaning, as far as Rab is concerned, I subscribe to the principle of Hoel. I don't feel it's an Issa Daraisa. So already I'm starting with an Issa Darabanan at best, at worst. So for me, it doesn't bother me. But for you, though, who maintains it's an Issa Daraisa to be cooking from Yontif to a weekday, so then what heter is there to cook from Yontif to Shabbos? Now, the first answer of Erev Tav Shilin, which is the correct answer, but that doesn't explain. Erev Tav Shilin is a rabbinic construct. That's a rabbinic mechanism. That's not going to be allowing an Issa Daraisa. So the Erev Tav Shilin is not a sufficient answer. So what is the answer? The answer is that really when we're talking about from Yontif to Shabbos, so that is Midda Araisa, you're allowed to cook from Yontif to Shabbos. The way Rashi described it yesterday, we did the Rashi inside. It was an exciting Rashi. Rashi yesterday said that according to Rav Chista's viewpoint, Yontif and Shabbos is Chada Kedusha. It's one long day. And so therefore, there is no problem Midda Araisa to cook from Yontif to Shabbos. It's Kedusha Achas. But nevertheless, however, people, if they get comfortable with the idea of cooking from Yontif to Shabbos, they're going to cook the following Yontif from a Yontif to a weekday. They're not going to see the difference. So therefore, the Erev Tav Shilin is there to serve as the hecker. It reminds people that what you're doing in truth is that you're giving an allowance to cook from Yontif to Shabbos, but that already the Torah does. It's a hecker, just simply a reminder that you're only able to cook from Yontif to Shabbos. You can't cook from a Yontif to a weekday. That's the purpose of Erev Tav Shilin. But it's not the matir. It's not what is allowing you to cook. Me ikar I didn't. The matir midaraisa is the fact that Yontif and Shabbos is kedusha achas. That kind of takes us to the end of what we got to yesterday. A quick recap. Eisve. We are now in the Gemara. We're about a dozen lines from the bottom of the Amud. And we are going to be starting now the back and forth between Rav Chis and Rabbah, a lot of questions as to whether or not we subscribe to this principle of Hovel or we do not subscribe to the principle of Hovel. So Eitzvei, we're going to start off with the first question. So the Mishnah basically describes an animal that is misukenes. Now, to be clear, it's not a treifa. There's nothing internally wrong with the animal. It just happens to be the animal's dying, right? That's simple biology, right? All things alive are going to die. So the animal's on its way to die, and now the problem is as follows, that if we don't take the opportunity of shechting it before it dies, so then obviously it's a nevela, we won't be able to eat it. So over here, so what I'd like to do is I'd like to shech the animal and salvage the meat of the animal. So however, the Mishnah says that you could do so on Yontif, but kedeshi yachol le'echol heimenu kezaitzli. There at least has to be the possibility that you're able to eat some of it on Yontif. A kezai specifically, a significant shear, so there has to be the possibility. Now, a careful reading of the Mishnah would seem to indicate yachol le'achol, afag avdolo bai lemechal. So as long as you can eat, you could eat, so that's going to be sufficient to allow you to shecht it. So now, bishlam lididi. So Rabbi says, for me, perfect. Damri ho'ol, because I subscribe to ho'ol. Ho'ol says we have to look at the possibility. Ho'ol v'yibai lemechal matziach l'misham hachi yishchot. So you understand the Mishnah. The Mishnah for me is great because you could have eaten a kezais of the meat prior to the end of Yontif, so therefore it's allowed. But according to you, Rav Chista, you don't subscribe to Hoel. So how did you understand the Mishnah in Beitza? So why are you going to shecht it? Doesn't make sense for you why you should shecht it. Sounds like for you, you shouldn't shecht it. The only way you'd be allowed to shecht is only if you actually ate a kezias of meat on Yontif. Not if you could have eaten. So Amalei, Mishum Hefse Mamono. So Rav Chista's answer is, well, maybe over here, the reason why it would be allowed is because of Hefse Mamon. You're going to lose a significant amount of money. So the Gemara says, Mishum Hefse Mamono Sharinan, Isur Daraisa. So the Gemara says, look, I grant you, you're going to lose a lot of money, but Hefse Mamon is not enough of a heter to allow what would be an Isur Daraisa. If you're shechting the animal from Yontif for a weekday, that's an Issa Daraisa. Okay, so you're talking about financial loss. But an Issa Daraisa, that's not going to allow it. So the Gemara says, let me clarify my answer. Amar lay in, Mishum Hefse Mamona Gamar Beliba Le'echol Kezayis V'yeshol Echazayis Basar V'lo Shchita. So the Gemara says, look, when a lot of money's on the line, so people do things that they normally aren't so super comfortable with. Meaning right now, as Yontif is coming to an end, right now I'm not that particularly hungry. You ask me to sit down and eat, I'm not that interested in eating. But the animal over here is dying. And if I don't check the animal right now, we're going to lose the animal. We're going to lose all the meat of that animal. It's a significant amount of money that's lost. The only allowance I have to check this animal on Yontif, if I have a kazayis of this meat on Yontif itself. And now I'm thinking to myself about that financial loss, and now I come to the following conclusion. You know what? I'm hungry. I'm going to eat a kazayis of the meat. And the way I'm describing it, by the way, although I understand it's slightly comical the way I'm describing it, I'm pretty much saying over Rashi. Rashi writes over here towards the bottom of the Yom, second to last Rashi. Yeah, okay, right now I wasn't hungry. I got news for you. I'm hungry. If eating a kazayis of the meat on Yontif is allowing me to shecht it on Yontif and to be able to salvage all that meat, I'm interested. That's how Rav Chisda will understand the Mishnah. It's not hovel, it's because I could eat the meat, but I'm actually going to be eating a kazayis of the meat. Once I decide I'm eating a kazayis of the meat, so now you're allowed to shecht the animal. And obviously when it comes to shechting, it's binary. Meaning obviously now there's plenty of meat that won't be eaten on Yontif, but that doesn't matter. As long as I'm eating a kazayis of the meat on Yontif, that's enough to justify the shechting of the animal on Yontif itself. E efshale kazayis basa b'lo shechita. Continuing in the Gemara. Eitzvei, we're on the very bottom of Memvav Amid Beis. And we're just going to go back and forth today with a number of proofs, which either is going to prove that we subscribe to Hovel, or just the opposite. Eitzvei, the Gemara challenges based on a Mishnah. The Lechem HaPanim. Bread that is placed on the Shulchan weekly in the Beis HaMikdash. 12 loaves are put on every Shabbos. And then the last week's 12 loaves that were put on are taken off. Right? The Mishnah in Tamid gives a beautiful description of how as one is going on, the other one's coming off. It has to be Lefanai Tamid. It has to be constantly on the Shulchan. The bread is going to be divided, those 12 loaves. 6 of those loaves are going to go to last week's Mishmar. 6 of those loaves are going to go to this week's Mishmar. And et cetera, v'chule, v'chule. Anyway, we're focusing right now on one aspect, and that is, when are you baking the lechem upon him? So you're not going to be baking it on Shabbos, you're baking it before Shabbos. Good. So lechem upon him nechal. So from the time of baking to the time of actually eating, so what is that time span? So it's going to be anywhere within the range of 9, 10, or even 11 days from baking to eating. So how does that range work from 9 to 11 days? So ketzad. So the Mishnah is going to explain. And that is kidarko, if it's a regular Shabbos, so to say. So Letisha Nefa, Be'erev Shabbos, Nechal, B'Shabbos Letisha. So what you're doing is you're baking it on Friday. You're putting it on the Shochan the next day, which is Shabbos. And then it's going to sit there for a week from Shabbos to Shabbos. So from Shabbos to Shabbos is 8 days. You're baking it the Friday prior. That's 9 days. So on a regular occurrence, on a regular schedule, it's going to be 9 days from baking to eating. Now, obviously, bread for 9 days is normally going to get stale. But nevertheless, the nace of the Shulchan is that it doesn't get stale. It comes off the table piping hot and fresh. Okay, anyway, that's on a regular scenario. Chal Yom Tov Lios Be'erev Shabbos. Let's say that it happens to be that Yom Tov falls out on a Friday. So Nechal Shabbos Asara. So now the baking is not going to override Yom Tov. Rather, what you're going to do is you're going to bake it the day prior, otherwise known as Thursday. And now from Thursday till the following Shabbos, that's going to be 10 days. Shnei Yomim Tovim Shal Rosh Hashanah Nechal Shabbos. La'achal Asar Lefishi Nadoch Lo Asar Shabbos V'lo Asar Yom Tov. So now let's say that Thursday and Friday turn out to be Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is a two-day yontav in Eretz Yisrael during the time of the Beis HaMikdash. Many of those details are going to be explained at length in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, and also the beginning of Beis as well. So anyway, the baking of the Lechem Apanim is not going to be overriding the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. Therefore, when am I baking it? I'm baking it now on a Wednesday. So from Wednesday, where now that Lechem Apanim is going to be put on the table on that Shabbos, eaten the following Shabbos, so that's going to be 11 days. Good. That is all the basic construct of when I'm baking the Lechem Apanim and when the Kohanim are going to be eating the Lechem Apanim. So now Rabba turns to Rav Chisda. So remember, Rav Chisda, how you argue that you're allowed to do Tzorchei Shabbos on Yontif. You can cook from Yontif for Shabbos. So over here, so why don't you allow it? Why don't you allow the baking of the lechem upon him to be done on Yontiv. Bake it on the Friday Yontiv, and it should be fine according to you. So Amalei Shvus Karova Hitiru Shvus Rechoka Lo Hitiru. So he says, look, over here what we're looking at is an Issa Derabanan. An Issa Derabanan that you're going to immediately benefit from, meaning if I'm cooking from Yontif to Shabbos, and I'm eating it the very next day, so that, the Chachamim were Mata, the Chachamim said that's fine. But to be baking it, only to be eating it now, 10 days later, 9 days later, 10 days later, 11 days later, so that the Chachamim weren't ready to be Mater. And I know we say throughout Shas ain't Shvus b'Mikdash, but hopefully at this point in time you're aware, because there's so many exceptions that's not an absolute. We don't always say ain't Shvus b'Mikdash, that there are no Isuri Derabban in the base of Mikdash. There are. It just happens to be that many of them are relaxed. This is not one of them that's relaxed. The Chachamim legislated that you cannot cook on a Yontiv, in this case bake on a Yontiv, where you're only going to be eating that some 10 days later. 9 days later, that the Chachamim did not allow. Ula Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Damar Mishum Rabbi Shimon Ben Hasgan Doches Yontov Veino Doches Yom Tzon. So the Gemara says, but there is an opinion, the opinion of Rabbi Shimon Ben Hasgan, who says that the baking of the lechem upon him is in fact going to be overriding Yontov. It's not going to be overriding Yom Kippur. If Yom Kippur falls down on a Friday, in our fixed calendar, Yom Kippur is not coming out on a Friday. But prior to the fixed calendar, it's possible that Yom Kippur can come out on a Friday. The baking of the lechem upon him is not going to be overriding Yom Kippur, but it would override Yontiv. So Ma'ik Elamemar. So the Gemara says, so what do you say on behalf of his position? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you what I'll say. It's actually very simple. Va'apligi Mar Sava Shavas Korova Yitiru Shavas Rechoka Lo Yitiru Umar Sava Shavas Rechoka Nami Yitiru. So what he'll say is that I disagree with your premise. You say that the Chachamim are only Matir Shavas Korova when I am cooking or baking from Yontiv to the following day that the Chachamim allowed. But 9 days later, 10 days later, that's what's called Shvus Rechoka. The Chachamim do not allow that. And what I'm saying, and Rabbi Shimon ben Hasgan's position is that no, the Chachamim were Matir, even Shvus Rechoka. Good. So we have defended Rav Chista in this particular case. Rashi over here makes a phenomenal observation, and it begs explanation. In the scenario that we just laid out, so you're having Rosh Hashanah come out to be on a Thursday and a Friday. So you can't bake the lechem upon him neither on Thursday nor on Friday, so that it has to be backed up to Wednesday. And you're going to be baking the lechem upon him on Wednesday, so that you're able to eat the lechem upon him the following Shabbos. And that's the 11-day span. So Rashi says, can we just think about the calendar for just a moment? Rosh Hashanah now comes out to be on a Thursday and a Friday. So in such a scenario, when's Yom Kippur? So, right, I under normal circumstances, I'd give everyone a moment to think about it. But here I'll give away the answer. Yom Kippur is going to be on a Shabbos, the following Shabbos. So calendarically, if Rosh Hashanah comes down on a Thursday, so then Yom Kippur comes down on a Shabbos. And now, what does that mean? It means that the Mishnah is really difficult to understand. The Mishnah says that under the circumstances where Rosh Hashanah comes out on a Thursday, Friday, so now what you're going to do is you're going to be baking it on Wednesday so that you're going to be able to eat it the following Shabbos. You're not eating it the following Shabbos. The following Shabbos is going to be Shabbos Yom Kippur. What are you doing eating the lechem upon him on the next Shabbos, Shabbos Yom Kippur? So for that, there are two answers that Rashi provides. Both of them being technical, but it's great. Meaning without thinking too much of it, you realize that we miss an important detail over here in the Mishnah. One answer Rashi suggests is the following. It's the first answer is technical, and that is that even in Eretz Yisrael, when they observe a 2-day Rosh Hashanah, it's not always going to be that the first day of that Rosh Hashanah is going to be the first day of Tishrei. Sometimes what comes out is that the 2-day Rosh Hashanah, it's the second day calendarically, which is the first day of Tishrei. And the first day of quote-unquote Rosh Hashanah is actually going to be the last day of Elul. And to go into this in more detail would require a lot of explanation. I'm not going to go through it right now. Just for our purposes right now, suffice to say that there are occasions where the 2-day Rosh Hashanah, the second day is actually the first day of Tishrei. In our fixed calendar, where we observe the 2-day Rosh Hashanah, so day number one is in fact the first day of Tishrei. Just in general, we should all be familiar with the idea that on a 2-day Rosh Chodesh, outside of Tishrei, and a 2-day Rosh Chodesh, day number one is the last day of the previous month, and day number two is the first day of the upcoming month. Okay. Anyway, and a 2-day Rosh Hashanah, it's not true. 2-day Rosh Hashanah, first day is the first day of Tishrei, second day obviously being Beis Tishrei. But there are occasions where, during the time of the Beis HaMikdash, when the calendar was not fixed, the first day of the two-day Rosh Hashanah is actually the last day of Elul. Okay, that's answer number one. If that's true now, obviously Yom Kippur no longer is coming out on a Shabbos. It's coming out on a Friday. That's answer number one. Answer number two of Rashi is that although the Lechem Aponim cannot be eaten on the Shabbos itself, on the Shabbos Yom Kippur, nevertheless, you can eat the Lechem Aponim that night, Motzei Yom Kippur. Okay, so, and that's a possibility as well. Okay, anyway, continuing in the Gemara, where Mem Zayin Amud Aleph, halfway down the Amud, Meisiv Rav Mari, Shtei Alechem Eino Nechalos Lo Pachos Mishtayim Velo Yoser Al Shlosha. We're basically, everything we just said regarding the Lechem Aponim, we're going to be doing the same thing with the Shtei Alechem. Shtei Alechem, two loaves that are brought on Shavuos, in conjunction with the Kivsei Atzeres. And so now, when are you baking the Shtei Alechem? So the answer is not on Shavuos. You're baking it before Shavuos. So sometimes it's going to be anywhere between a 2 to 3 day separation between the time that it's baked and the day that it's actually consumed. Ketzad nefas erev yom tov nechalas yom tov l'shnayim chal yom tov lios achar Shabbos nechalas yom tov l'shlosha l'fishi and adoch halos Shabbos v'lo siyam tov. So this is really straightforward. You're going to be baking the Shtei Alechem, not on Yontif, but the day before Yontif, which means now that the number of days separating when you baked and when you ate is going to be two, meaning you're counting both the day that you're baking and the day that you're eating. So that's 2 days. If, however, the day before Shavuos comes out to be a Shabbos, which means Shavuos is a Sunday, so then you're going to be baking it on Friday. That's 3 days separating the baking and the eating of the Shtei Alechem. And now, Iyamar Tzarchei Shabbos Nasim B'Yom Tov. So the Gemara says now, again, an attack on the position of Rav Chista. Rav Chista, you say that you can cook from Yom Tov for the following day, which is the Shabbos. So now, Hashta, the Shabbos B'Yom Tov, Shabbos B'Yom Tov, B'Yom Tov, Mibaye. If you're allowed to cook from Yom Tov for the next day, which is Shabbos, don't you think you're allowed to cook from Yom Tov for the day itself? Meaning, why is it that you're not allowed to cook and bake the Shtei Alechem on Yom Tov? For Yantiv, right? That doesn't make any sense. So Shani Hasam Damakra Lachem Lachem Velola Gavoa. So the Gemara gives an answer. The Gemara says, yeah, that's true in general. You're not allowed to. Over here, however, Lachem Velola Gavoa. What does that mean? It means that in Yantiv you're allowed to cook, but only when you and I consume. But what we're not allowed to do is cook when the recipient, the beneficiary of that cooking, is going to be the Beis HaMikdash. Now, it's true that the Shtei Alechem is going to be consumed by the Kohanim. That part's true. But Mishulchan Gavoa Kazachu. It's not that they're eating something that's theirs. They're eating something that belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu invited the Kohanim to eat off of his Shulchan, so to say. So under those circumstances, this is what's called Ligavoa. And that does not, it's not included in the heter of cooking on Yontif. Cooking on Yontif is only Lachem Velola Gavoa. Now it happens to be the Rav Shimon Gamliel, quoting Rabbi Shimon ben Hasagan, who, like in the case of the Lechem Aponim, allows for the baking of the Lechem Aponim to be done on Yontif, for, let's say the Yontif comes out on a Friday, allows you to bake it on Yontif for to be eaten, to be put in the Shulchan the following Shabbos, to the next day, to be eaten the following Shabbos, good. For the Shtei Alechem, so also is Mako, and allows the Shtei HaLechem to be baked on Yontif itself. So what's his position? So several Lakabashol Da'am Lachem Lachem Velola Nachrim. So he says, yeah, I have a drush of Lachem, but my drush of Lachem is a little bit different. Lachem Velola Nachrim. You're not allowed to cook on Yontif for a non-Jew. You can only cook on Yontif for a Jew. But his drusha is specifically excluding a non-Jew. His drusha is not at all engaged with the issue of Lachem Velola Gavoa. So therefore, for him, there is no exclusion of Gavoa. So therefore, you're allowed to cook on Yontif for Gavoa. For the Shtei Alechem, you're allowed to cook on Yontif itself. Good? Next, Mem Zayin Amud Aleph. Still the back and forth between Rabba and Rav Chista. So Shalch Le Rav Chista Le Rabba, Biyad Rav Acha Bar Rav Huna Miyamrin and Hoel. So here now, correspondence between Rav Chista and Rabba. So not only do they argue face-to-face, but they argue even via correspondence as well. So you say that we subscribe to Hoel. That's your position. Interesting. Let's do a mission in Makos. Vatanan. So here we have a mission in the third parak of Makos. Yesh Chorosh Talam Echad V'chayev Alem Mishum Shmona Lavim. So the Mishnayos do this on a number of occasions throughout Shas, And that is, let's find the maximum number of Isurim that can be connected with one action. So here you're going to be plowing a row in the field, and here we could ring you up for 8 lavim of the Torah. So choresh b'shor v'chamor. So you're plowing, and what are you using now as the engine for your plow? So you're going to be using a ox and a donkey, and they're going to be plowing together, and that's kalayim, and that already is lav number 1. Vein mukdashim, and both of them belong to hekdesh. Now the shor could be actually kedushas aguf. The chamor can't be kedushas aguf, but it could be. It could have kedushas damim. Either way, they both now are hekdesh. And what are you doing now by plowing these animals that are hekdesh? You're being moel behekdesh. So vehein mukdashin. Good. So that is now going to be isurim numbers 2 and 3. Right? Each animal represents its own isur. As you're being moel behekdesh. So that's isurim 2 and 3. Kalayim bekerem. Now it could be that that which you are plowing is kalayim bekerem. Now as the plow is going through, so now what you're going to be doing is that you're going to be covering the you're going to be covering some of the seeds, right? We're assuming that there are seeds, grape seeds and other grain seeds that are over there. And Rashi writes over here on the top of the Amud Beis, Uveklaim bekerem de behadi de kacharish mechape beklaim. Va mechape beklaim loke. So and just by covering, so that in itself is a form of planting, and so therefore you're going to get malchus for that as well. That was number 4, lav number 4. Uvishviis, right? Rashi, by the way, seems to have these two flipped around. Anyway, uvishviis, and now it happens to be during the Shemitah year, plowing during the Shemitah year. That's another iser. So that's number 5. Biyamtov, and also, which day of the week did you decide to plow? So you plowed on a yantav. Why didn't the Gemara give the example of Shabbos? So Rashi points out over here because for Shabbos that's a capital punishment, and we know that anything which is Mises Beis Din, so for that you're not going to get malchus, right? If for whatever reason the warning was not for Mises Beis Din for skila, but the warning was going to be for malchus, you don't receive malchus for something which is chayvei Mises Beis Din. Okay, technical point. So that's why we elected over here yantav. Yantav, as we just went over on the Amud Aleph, is not a Mises Beis Din. It's only a lav. So therefore, that's going to be now lav number 6 in this scenario. And who's plowing? So Kohen v'Nazir abeis atuma. So it happens to be that the Kohen, and he's also a Nazir, is plowing. And it happens to be that the area that we're plowing is a beis atuma. There's a cemetery over here. Okay, granted, we got a little bit creative in order to get to 8 lavin. But nevertheless, so you can plow one row in the field and be subject to 8 separate lavin. Good. This is all the Mishnah in Makos. Now, Rav Chista says to Rabba, let's remember, you subscribe to Hovel. Hovel says that we're able to look at possibilities. Possibilities will be able to spare you from lavin. Meaning, remember where we started this whole discussion, where Rabba was of the position that if I cook on Yontif for the next day, a weekday, so you're not going to get Malkus. So why not get Malkus? Because it's possible that guests are going to be coming on Yontif itself. So the principle of Hovel is sparing you from Malkus. So over here, so Rav Chista now is going to ask what seems to be a phenomenal question. And that once we look at possibilities, and that spares you from Malkus, so over here, why don't we look at the possibility? Amrin and Hovel, acharisha lo lechayiv. So therefore, for the act of plowing, you should not be chayiv. Why? Hold the chazel lekisu edam tzipur. Because it comes out now that I may need the dirt in order to fulfill the mitzvah of kisur adam. You shecht either a chaya or an oaf. You have a mitzvah of kisur adam. You got to cover the blood, and you got to cover the blood in dirt. The very first Mishnah in Masechta Beitza talks about how to prepare the dirt before yantiv, so that for yantiv you have the prepared dirt, so that you are able to shecht chaya v'oaf and do the mitzvah of kisur adam. Anyway, in this circumstance over here, it could very well be that as I am plowing, I'm going to get dirt that I need for the mitzvah of Kisur Adam, even if I don't have a bird presently here. Hoel talks about the possibility. Since it's possible that I'm going to have a bird, so therefore I'm going to need the dirt for Kisur Adam, and so therefore this is now what's called a malacha for Tzorech Ochel Nefesh, v'chazal Kisur Adam Tzipor. So shouldn't that be enough at least to remove you from the makos that the Mishnah in Makos says you're going to be receiving? So Amar of Papa Barashmo ba'avanim mekur zalos. So the question is really good, because Hovel really does now say that since it's possible that there is the justification for this plowing, so therefore you're not going to get Malkus. So now the Gemara says, if that's true, so why, Rabbah, did the Mishnah in Malkus ring you up for 8, including for doing Charisha on Yantav? It's a strong question. So the Gemara is going to have to give Ukimtas, right? The answers are going to be difficult. So the answer the Gemara says is Avanim Mekur Zalos. Well, could it be that we're talking about where you're plowing through stones? And these stones are not going to be good for the mitzvah of Kisur Adam. Kisur Adam has to be done with dirt, not with stones. So the Gemara says, Ru'i L'Kochan. So the Gemara says, yeah, but you can grind up these stones. Ketisha B'yamtav Mishare. So the Gemara says, yeah, but you're allowed to do that on Yantav. You can grind up the stones on Yantav. So Ru'uyos L'Kochan K'la'achayad. So the Gemara says, yes, you can. What you're allowed to do is that you can grind them up, but you can do them K'la'achayam in an unusual fashion. And even though midah rabbanan that would be usur, but at least midah araisa, you're not violating yantav. And again, what we're looking for is just simply to get you out of the malchus that the mission malchus is gearing you up for. So the Gemara says, okay, so once again, it's possible that you can grind it up and you will need it for the kisur adam, and therefore you shouldn't get malchus for that. So the Gemara says bitsunama. So the Gemara says, yeah, but we're talking about where it's not just rocks, but it's rocks that are not eligible for grinding. Okay, bedrock, if you will. So tsunama barzria. So the Gemara says, okay, that's funny. Remember, the Mishnah Malkus is talking about where you're plowing because you wanna plant something over there. If we're talking about bedrock, you're not planting anything over there. So the Gemara continues with the ukimta tsunama milamala, the alfar tichuach milamata. Yeah, so it's bedrock on top, and it's dirt on the bottom. V'tepakle mishum afer tichoch. So the Gemara says, well, if there's dirt below, so then that could be used for the kisur adam. Meaning, once again, there is going to be at least for yantav purposes justification for doing the plowing. In that, I could use the dirt for the mitzvah of kisur adam, and even in this ukimta where it's bedrock on top and it's dirt below, the dirt should at least spare me from the malchus. So Ela Amar Mar Bar Rav Ashi Bitina. So the Gemara says, okay, new kimta. Maybe we're talking about where it's mud over here. Bitina Bar Zriyahu. So the Gemara says, yeah, you're going to be planting in the mud. So the Gemara says, Bitunta. So the Gemara says, yeah, it's a kind of mud that you can plant in. Okay, without fully understanding all the ukimta over here, nevertheless, the Gemara says that it's possible to come up with an ukimta where there is going to be plowing, but whatever the earth is that I'm plowing, it's just simply not eligible for the mitzvah of Kisur Adam. Had it been eligible for the mitzvah of Kisur Adam, according to Rabbah, since I could use it for the mitzvah of Kisur Adam, so therefore you're not going to get Malkus. And as far as the Mishnah Malkus is concerned, the Mishnah Malkus is dealing with a specific ukimta, the circumstances such that I'm plowing with something that I can't do Kisur Adam with. Okay. Eisve, we're going to do one more for this morning. And that's going to be another challenge. Eisve Abaye. Hamavashel Gidanasha Bechalav. So let's say you take your Gidanasha and you're going to be cooking it with milk. So, B'yamtav, and you do it on Yantav. V'ochlo. And then you go ahead and you eat it. Okay, so you're having just the best of days in terms of the number of Isurim of the Torah that you violated. Loke Chamesh. So you're going to be subject to 5 sets of Malkus. And what are they? So here now we're going to go through them. Again, this is another Mishnah Malkus going through an event in which it's going to result in many Isurim in the Torah and many Malkus. 5 over here specifically. Mishum Mevashel Gibbiyamtav. So number one, you're cooking the Gidanash on Yantav. Cooking on Yantav is allowed, but only Ochel Nefesh, only if consumption comes out on the other end of that cooking. When you're cooking the Gidanash, you're not going to, it's not an Achila. Now, the Gidanash, we're going to be discussing this extensively in the Gemara in Chulin, the 7th Perek. The Gidanash is funny. It's an inedible item of the animal, right? It's the nerve, it's the sciatic nerve, and yet the Torah says don't eat it. So if I eat it, you violate the Torah, but it's really inedible, right? And there's a debate over there in the Mishnah whether or not the Gidanash is no seitam or it's not no seitam. It's a funny item. But nevertheless, the idea over here is that it's not edible. So by cooking an anyantav, you violate the iser of bishul anyantav because you cook something that's really inedible. So that's lav number one. Lav number two, loka mishum ochel gid. And then for eating it, because remember, the event over here included the cooking and the eating. So for the eating it, you're going to receive malchus for eating the gid anasha. A simple lav in the Torah. Veloka mishum mevashel basa b'chalav. Now, the gid anasha over here is considered to be meat. again, it's really a difficult item to look at halachically and to decide what it is halachically. The Gemara over here is looking at it as meat, and as such, so therefore you're cooking the Gidonash with milk, so that's Bishul Basar B'Chalav, an Isra in the Torah. V'loka Mishum Ocha Basar B'Chalav, on top of that, you're also eating it, so that you're now going to be subject to the Isra of Ocha Basar B'Chalav. That's number four. And loka mishum havara, and also you started a fire in order to cook it. Starting the fire in order to cook it. So again, starting a fire on Yantiv. So if it's for ochel nefesh, if consumption comes out on the other side of that, that would be fine. But over here, there is no consumption because we're talking about the ginanasha. Now, e amrin and hoel. So now the Abayi over here is challenging Rabbah. Rabbah, you subscribe to hoel. Isn't that correct? So now, shouldn't you say over here that the Hoel should spare you from Malkus for the Havara, for the starting of the fire? Avar lo lechayv hol dechazilei letzorcho. Because I started a fire for this particular dish. Okay, this particular dish is not a consumable dish. It's Gidonasha. But then I can turn around, take the very same fire that I made, and cook something that is edible, anyantiv. And since it's possible that I'm going to do that, so according to you, Rabbah, shouldn't that now spare me from the Malkus? So Amalei Apikavar va'ayol Gidonasha shol nevela. So Rabbah says, okay, look, that's a really strong question. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to manipulate the Mishnah. And what we're going to do is that we're going to take out Havara and replace it with Gidonasha shol nevela. So now when it's Gidonasha shol nevela, so now subject to two Isurim. One Gidonasha and a second one that it is a nevela. V'hatini Rabbi Chia lokin shtayim al achilasa v'shalosh al bishulo. So the Gemara says, okay, but I'll tell you what. Even if you have that kind of editing power, it's not going to work over here because we have a supplemental brisa to the Mishnah. The supplemental brisa of Rabbi Chia tells us that of the five malchus over here, we can organize it to two and three. Two for eating and three for cooking. And so now you want to now take out Havar and replace it with the Gidonasha of Nevela. You can't do that because now that upsets our organization. We said two for cooking three for cooking and two for eating. Now, the way you're setting it up, it's three for eating and two for cooking. It just simply doesn't work out. The Isa shal shal chila somi ba'ilei. So, ela apik havar va'ayel atse muksa. As the Gemara says, okay, so here's what we'll do. Again, in order to defend Rabbah, we're going to take out Havara. You must have that editing power. You'll take out Havara, and what you'll do is you'll substitute it now for atse muksa. And wood, which is muksa. Muksa over here, it was not set aside for yantiv. So the Gemara says, that's interesting. So it's not set aside for yantiv, it's muksa. Muksa daraisahi. So the Gemara says, really? And now you're going to be receiving malchus for that? That's an issa daraisa amrali in? So the Gemara says, yeah, there is a concept of muksa being daraisa. So he says, yeah, we do find that muksa is an issa daraisa, at least according to the position of Rabbah. Once again, once we open up the Masechta Beitza, so we're going to find over there, right on Daf Beiza, Beiza Med Beiz, so we're going to find Hachana de Rabbah. The Rabbah says that if something is not prepared for Yantiv, and then I make use of it on Yantiv, so you're violating the Isra of Hachana. Our Gemara over here, by the way, seamlessly transitions Rabbah's idea of Hachana to the terminology of Muksa. Anyway, the point being is that it is an Issa Daraisa. So if we take out now the Havara and we replace it with Atse Muksa, so that would be our fifth lav, and that it's associated with the act of cooking, and that's how now it can fit into the Mishnah, and we've also successfully defended Rabbah. And that means that even if I am Rabbah, and even if I subscribe to Hoel, nevertheless, what we're going to say is that in that Mishnah over there, you're not going to get Malkus for the Havara, because for Havara, that very fire I could use for something which is permissible on Yantiv, but rather what we're going to do is that we're going to take that out and we're going to replace it with Atse Muksa, subscribing to the viewpoint of Rabbah, which is that Atse Muksa is in fact an Issa Daraisa. We'll stop here. Let's quickly review and we'll pick it up tomorrow, Mirtza Hashem. So today, really one topic of discussion, and that is the very basic machlokus between Rabbah and Rav Chisda, whether or not we subscribe to the principle of Hoel or we do not. Rabbah, so he is a subscriber to Hoel, which means that what halacha allows us to do is to look at what could be possibilities, and under certain circumstances where you have those possibilities, so that will determine a particular halacha. In the beginning of the discussion, you cook on Yantav, but for the next day, for a weekday. And so even though I'm declaring that I'm violating the Issa Daraisa of cooking on Yantav where there's no Heter Vochel Nefesh, which would mean that it would be an Issa Daraisa, nevertheless, Rabbi says you're going to be spared from Malkus. Why are you going to be spared from Malkus? Because guests may come in on Yantav, and I may end up be feeding this food to the guests that come in. That's the principle of Hollel. So again, Hollel does not condone the act, but what Hollel is able to do is relieve you from the Malkus, spare you from the Issa Daraisa that you claim that you're going to do. Rav Chista does not subscribe to Hollel, and so therefore, according to Rav Chista, if you cook on Yantav for the following day, for a weekday, so you are going to get Malkus for that. Good. That's the machlokus between Rabbi and Rav Chista, whether we subscribe to Hollel or we do not. And for the remaining part of today's daf, so we went through a series of Mishnayos and Braisos in terms of whether or not this is a supportable position, whether we subscribe to Hollel or we do not subscribe to Hollel. We went through the Mishnah Beitzah regarding Mesukenis. I'll tell you what, we can go through, going through every source is really going to just go over the entire daf again. Anyway, that is the basic outline of the Gemara, in that we went through a number of Mishnayos and Braisos. Many of them seem to support the principle of Hollel, but many of them do not seem to support the principle of Hollel. And the Gemara defended Rabbah throughout the entire daf. We'll stop over here.